This is Community Radio KGNU, and we continue next with our nutrition programming. If you've been tuning in all week on the Morning Magazine, you will have heard our reports from fifth graders at Ashley Elementary School in Denver, who've been reporting on the challenges facing them around healthy eating. It's part of our Eat Your Radio series. Please do check out that website, eatyourradio.kgnu.org. It's been recognised by the Colorado Broadcasters Association for its work around the area of nutrition radio journalism. Well, we continue that discussion this morning. My guest in the studio is Robin O'Brien. Now, Robin is a food activist, a public speaker on the issue of nutrition, and author of The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. But ultimately, Robin is a mom, and that really got her into this area of food activism. Joining us, hopefully a little bit later on, will be Chef Anne Cooper. She's also known as the Renegade Lunch Lady. She's currently working in Boulder Valley Schools to transform school lunches. And we'll be opening up the phone lines a little bit later on. But Robin, thank you so much for coming in today. I know you've been on KGNU before.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, it is great to have you. And as I said, this issue of nutrition, it's topical because we've been talking about it all week on KGNU, but it's topical because it's in the news everywhere. We're seeing on, you know, commercial television, celebrity chefs like Jamie Oliver coming over to start a food revolution. We're seeing the USDA eliminating the food pyramid just last week and coming up with the new My Plate. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And this issue of food and nutrition just seems to be everywhere. And yet at the same time, the statistics are still staggering around childhood obesity, adult obesity, childhood diabetes. I mean, even though we're talking about it, nothing seems to be changing.
You know, the statistics are absolutely jaw-dropping. And when you look at nutrition, you also are recognizing that 1 in 3 children now are struggling. They're overweight or obese. But at the same time, 1 in 4 children are malnourished and they're not getting the food they need. And so what it speaks to is that we're lacking nutrients at all levels, at all ends of the spectrum, whether on the obesity end or the malnourishment end. Children are not getting the nutrition that they need and the nutrients that they need. And what we're realizing is that as we shifted to this processed food diet, those foods are pretty void of nutrients. And what we're trying to get back to now is a nutrient-dense diet so that, you know, the calories that we do consume, we really make them count so you get the most bang for your buck. And I think as increasing scientific evidence mounts about the role that diet and nutrition does play in conditions like obesity, diabetes, cancer, according to the American Cancer Society, cancer is the leading cause of death by disease in children under the age of 15, and yet it can be largely prevented due to diet, nutrition, and exercise alone. And as we begin to really acknowledge that and really address these changes, as jaw-dropping as these statistics are, with the record number of children that we're seeing with these conditions, which sadly has earned them the nickname Generation RX, as we do learn this information, we realize that there is so much that we can do to protect the health of our families.
Well, we're going to touch on all of these issues, but I'd like to just get back to that issue of weight, because there's so much focus on overweight kids, obese kids. And yet, as you very accurately mentioned, it's not necessarily a weight thing, because you could have a thin child, but they could be completely nutritionally deficient.
You know, I think up until this point, we've all been sort of taught calories in, calories out. If we consume, expend the energy. But what we're realizing is that not all calories are created equal. Some calories are full of vitamins and minerals, and some are absolutely empty and just full of sugar and empty calories. And so the calories that you do choose to put into a child or into yourself, for that matter, to focus on nutrient-dense foods rather than these nutrient-void will go so far in helping protect the health of your family.
Well, I'm going to talk about how you personally got involved in this particular issue. But just to look at the overall political situation here in the US, it seems like something everyone should be able to get behind and leave at the door any kind of partisan politics. Childhood nutrition, what's best for kids? And yet that doesn't seem to be the case. What are your thoughts on why we cannot get policy in place here to have better foods out there in schools for kids, around advertising of sugary foods and fast foods to kids, around labeling issues of foods to kids? Why has it been politicized to the degree that it has been?
You know, that's a great question. And I think, you know, food is such an intimate issue. It's very personal. It's cultural. It speaks to our family values. It speaks to how we were raised. And so whenever someone presents their ideas, it can challenge more than the way you shop in a grocery store. I mean, in some cases, it can really challenge your core belief system. And so, you know, there's a real sensitivity, I think, that needs to be in place when you're discussing this. And it's also, you know, as we learn this information, as we learn about the increasing number of additives in the U.S. food supply, as we learn how our corporations are formulating their products differently for eaters in other countries so that they don't contain some of these harmful additives, that's tough information to learn sometimes. And so deliver that information with compassion and understanding, I think, helps disarm people and make them a little bit more receptive to hearing the message. But you're right, it has become an incredibly political issue. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is that while the children are only 30% of our population, they represent 100% of our future. And since they have earned that nickname, Generation RX, what we're seeing are increasing healthcare costs associated with managing those diseases. Now, my background prior to motherhood, I was an analyst. I covered the food industry and some other industries. And as I started to look into that data, what I realized is that the U.S. spends less than almost any other country on food. We spend about 9 cents of every dollar on food. Yet at the same time, we spend more than almost any other country managing disease and spend 16 cents of every dollar on healthcare. And so what's happening is that because we're spending increasing amounts of our money on healthcare, we're doing that at the family level. We're having to manage these diseases, buy these prescription drugs, spend the time in the doctor's office. But it's also happening at the corporate level. And you've got corporations like Starbucks, who it was recently reported in the New York Times, they're spending more on healthcare costs than they are on coffee. And this is where I think, you know, if we really can really look at this together as Americans, as a national family, sitting down to our national dinner table, what we can see is that our global competitiveness might very well be at stake because we're so busy now managing these diseases that our corporations can't drive their profitability towards their core competencies. And so, you know, it's really going to become this weight weighing us down in the global marketplace. And so for me, I think, you know, one of the most patriotic things that we could be doing as Americans, all of us, regardless of where your political leanings might be, is to really begin to protect the health of our families, because ultimately that's protecting the health of our corporations and the health of our economy.
A lot to talk about, Robin. We're going to be opening up the phone lines in a little bit, but I would like to get back to, as I said at the beginning, why you started in this area, because you were a concerned mom and you were concerned about what you were feeding your kids. Tell us, bring us back to the start of how you got involved in food activism.
It's funny because I don't think of it as activism. I think of it just simply as something that was so inspired by the love that I have for my children, as any mother would be. 5 years ago, my youngest child had an allergic reaction to breakfast one morning. And, you know, up until that point, I really hadn't given a whole lot of thought about these epidemics that we were seeing in children. Thankfully, they hadn't affected us yet. And yet at the same time, that morning, as she had this food allergic reaction, I thought, you know, I didn't know anybody with food allergies when I was a child. And, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, I mean, a PB&J and a carton of milk weren't loaded weapons on a lunchroom table the way they are today.
So what reaction did you have? What actually happened?
Her face started to swell shut. And again, I was so completely clueless as to what a food allergy actually looked like that I thought the older three had maybe put something in her face. And so as I took care of her. We took her to the pediatrician's office. We got her calmed down. You know, I wanted to dig into the data. It was the finance analyst in me. And as I started looking at the statistics, it was just jaw-dropping to see the increases that we're seeing in the number of children with food allergies. The CDC had reported a 265% increase in the rate of hospitalizations related to food allergic reactions. So that was doctors checking people into ER. And, you know, with that, I thought, you know, what's changed? Why are children so allergic to food? Is there something foreign in the food that wasn't there when we were kids that they're reacting to? And as I dug into that data, that's when I realized that, yes, we really have, in the last 20 years, manipulated our food supply to drive profitability for the agricultural industry or for the food industry. And so the analyst in me, that made perfect sense. But at the same time, to see how those costs have been externalized, to see how those liabilities have been externalized, not only onto the consumer, but also onto the farmer, you know, it begs the question, now that we know this 20 years in, shouldn't we be reassessing and let's get these costs accounted for in the system so that ultimately consumers and corporations and our economy aren't bearing these costs?
Well, I suppose it begs the question that you know, did your daughter and all of these children, are they having a food allergy? Is it a reaction to the food, or is it a reaction to what has now become a food-like substance, I guess, to paraphrase Michael Pollan? Because this isn't ultimate food. If you look at the back of any processed food, there are things on there that aren't food. I mean, there are on the label, there are items on there that cannot be classified as food.
Absolutely. And the children are reacting, you know, at all different levels. And a lot of the doctors are saying, you know, they're canaries in the coal mine. They're warning us of the dangers in these foods. And when you start manipulating food at the DNA level, which is what we started to do in the 1990s, and you're introducing all kinds of agrochemical ingredients. And again, it makes sense. I mean, it's driving profitability. You've got insecticidal proteins. You're able to engineer a soybean to withstand increasing doses of weed killers. Now, as an analyst, that makes perfect sense, but you're absolutely right. No studies were ever conducted to see how a child might react to, I mean, I wouldn't even call them food-like proteins. Those are chemical proteins. And no studies were ever conducted. And for that reason, governments around the world said, we don't know if this is safe. So we're either not going to allow these into our food supply, or we're going to insist on labeling so that consumers can make an informed choice. Here in the U.S., we just took a different approach. We just said it's never been proven dangerous, no need to label. And these things were introduced into the food supply in the 1990s.
So kind of like innocent until proven guilty, as opposed to taking a pre-active or preemptive approach that the rest of the world has. Can you just expand a little bit further on that? What is maybe happening in Europe and other countries with regard to what is allowed in the food chain? And what's not happening here in the U.S.?
Well, you know, I think the perfect example is this new technology that was introduced in the 1990s by the biotech industry, where they were able to genetically manipulate the DNA of certain food proteins. And again, it made sense. It drove profitability. It was first done with milk supply. There was an artificial growth hormone that was injected into dairy cows to help them make more milk. And I mean, who can get in front of that? That makes perfect sense. But what happened is that it was making those cows sick. It was causing mastitis and ovarian cysts and lameness and all kinds of skin disorders. And so for that reason, it required an increased antibiotic use in the animals. And so for that reason alone, governments around the world, all 27 countries in Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, they said, you know, we don't want that in our food supply because it's making the cows sick. It's requiring this increased antibiotic use. And then as studies started to come out, it also showed that same growth hormone elevated hormone levels that were linked to breast, prostate, and colon cancer. And so again, these countries said, this has not yet been proven safe. We're going to keep it out of our food supply. But back here in the U.S. in 1994, we introduced it. And so as I learned that information, you know, I thought, well, is a kid with a milk allergy, like you're saying earlier, is he allergic to milk that we all grew up drinking? Or is he allergic to this synthetic growth hormone that has now found its way into our dairy? And when I went to leading allergists in our country, they said, you know, we don't know. There are no tests. There are no tests. And so essentially that test, that trial is being run on the American population.
And why has the American government and officials here allowed that to happen, to essentially experiment on children?
Well, you know, I mean, as I address that question, and again, it's where you realize that, you're having to learn some things that you really may not want to know. And that, you know, as I was beginning to navigate the grocery store differently, I was also reassessing an entire belief system. And so as I went back to the FDA and thought, you know, how was this approved here in the U.S. when all of these other countries around the world rejected it? I learned that, you know, because of the way our federal budget is structured, the FDA doesn't have enough money to conduct independent research. And so therefore, they rely on industry to conduct the safety studies of their own products. And so, you know, for example, with this growth hormone, interestingly, what happened was the woman who wrote the report for that product then resigned from the company, went into the FDA and approved her own report. And so, you know, again, we know that the country, the lobbying that's in place in this country, you know, do we really want to know that this is what's happened with the food supply? It's tough information to learn, but I think once you learn it, then you're better able to make an informed choice when it comes to feeding your families.
And it seems to be very tough information to digest, sorry to use the food analogy there, particularly as a parent and maybe as a mother, when giving food to your child is the most basic thing you can do to nurture them. And then when you find out that what you're feeding the child is actually making them sick, that creates a major paradigm shift and actually a whole internal conflict, I'm sure, as a mother, because That it sounds like that sounds like what you went through.
I mean, absolutely. I was not a foodie. I didn't know how to cook. I was nuking nuggets and serving tubes of blue yogurt. And so to learn that caused enormous heartache and grief. And I think, you know, as you come through that sadness, you know, you really what inspires you through all of that is the love you have for your children. And that's an incredibly positive emotion. And that can fuel remarkable change. And I think, you know, really the disadvantage that mothers here in the U.S. is that we simply weren't told. We weren't told of the risks that these products might present. We weren't told that they were never approved for use in other countries. We weren't told that our American corporations are formulating their products differently for eaters in other countries. And so, you know, my goal was to just simply provide that information to mothers in the U.S. so that we can make an informed choice when it comes to protecting our kids.
Well, we'll talk a little bit further in just a moment about, is that enough? If we have that information, does that automatically lead the way to healthier eating in terms of, you know, maybe there are even more barriers like food labeling, and what we think is a good thing might not be a good thing. We'll continue that discussion with Robin O'Brien, but I would like to remind our listeners that this is Community Radio KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran. We've been hearing from Robin O'Brien, who speaks a lot nationally on the issue of nutrition. She's the author of The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. That, I think, is the key, Robin. We're going to get to that in just a moment, what we can do about it, how we can be empowered. It's part of our ongoing nutrition programming here on KGNU. All this week we've been hearing reports from fifth graders in Ashley Elementary in Denver, part of our Eat Your Radio series. And I'd like to welcome my next guest. Chef Anne Cooper is joining us in the studio. Many people know her as the Renegade Lunch Lady, and she's bringing her renegadeness to the Boulder Valley School District and transforming how kids in Boulder Valley are eating. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us. We've just been hearing from Robin there some scary analysis of the food system here in the US, particularly around processed foods. If you look at the back of any processed food item, there are so many ingredients on there that really cannot be labelled as food. I mean, it can't be thought of as food. I know your mission is to bring fresh food into schools. Tell us a little bit about some of the barriers that you've come upon when you've tried to bring this. It seems like a basic idea. Let's get fresh food into the school cafeterias, but it's not as easy as that.
Yeah, it would seem easy, and it's just really a challenge. I mean, there's five big challenges that everybody faces. Food, finance, facilities, human resources, and marketing. Food, where are you going to get it and make sure it's good? Finances, how do we pay for it? Facilities, what do we do when we don't have kitchens? Human resources, how do we train or retrain hundreds of people to actually find their kitchens and not nuke nuggets? And finally, how do we get the kids to eat it? Because big business spends $17 to $20 billion a year marketing non-nutrient foods to kids. I mean, we have a generation of children now who thinks chicken nuggets is a food group and hot Cheetos is breakfast. So, I mean, there's just every single place you turn, you know, there are challenges to overcome.
And so how have you managed to overcome them? I know you started out in California. You're bringing it now to Colorado. We're very grateful for that. How did you get past some of those things? When you're talking to a school district that, as we're hearing all the time, are more and more strapped for cash, looking at the bottom line on a budget, how do you say, you know what, let's get healthy food in, even though it's a bit more expensive?
Well, I don't actually go looking for districts. I want to work with districts that are really looking to change. So in the case of both Berkeley and Boulder, they really were ready. They both had strong community groups. They had support from the school board, support from the superintendent. And those kind of things are really, really important. But I wouldn't say past tense. I mean, these are ongoing solutions, and it's just a lot of baby steps, one step after another after another. You know, you just have to keep moving forward with the changes. And it's really an evolution of, you know, one thing leads to another. So what we're really trying to do is just feed kids fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains, and healthy proteins, and real food. I mean, not chemicals. So we have no high fructose corn syrup. We have no trans fats, no colors, no dyes. Salad bars in every school, organic milk at lunch. I mean, really making progress, but it's hard getting the kids to eat it.
Well, let's talk about that. How do you get the kids to eat it? Because are these kids who are coming from families that they're not getting this food at home? Or is it as simple as saying they just don't like it? I mean, what do you think the root cause is?
Well, I think, you know, Boulder Valley is a big school district. It's spread over 550 square miles. So what may be a challenge in Boulder proper may be a different challenge in East County. But I think there's a lot of different things. I mean, we now have what's considered children's food. You know, two generations ago, there wasn't children's food, and we had food. You know, the kids might have eaten it a little bit different texturally or a little bit different spice flavor-wise, but it was just food. Now kids have their own food, and that's the food they, you know, they're just being mass marketed to believe that chicken nuggets is a food group. And that we've also got the kids ingrained to high fat, high salt, high sugar food. And that's sort of their palate now. So, you know, when I want to wean them off French fries and feed them fresh broccoli, and all of a sudden, that's just not that easy. So in some cases, they are getting it at home, but in a lot of cases, they're just not. And with the parents might not always want to change. I mean, as you've heard from Robin, you know, I mean, parents want to feel like what they're feeding their kids is good. And so if this is the food you've been feeding your kids, and then I come in and go, well, you shouldn't be feeding your kids that, then, you know, somehow I become the enemy.
That is Chef Anne Cooper. She's one of my guests this morning, along with Robin O'Brien, author of the book, The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU Boulder, Denver, as we continue our look at nutrition issues this morning. We're going to be opening up the phone lines. It's just a couple of minutes to 9 o'clock. If you'd like to weigh in on this conversation, the number is 303-442-4242, 303-442-4242. You know, a lot of people refer to the Boulder bubble, that we're in Boulder here. Obviously, we're broadcasting way outside Boulder Valley, but a lot of people say, well, in Boulder, we've got the farmers market. That's a beautiful farmers market. There's one in Longmont. There's some in other parts of Boulder County. There's so many organic food stores you can go into. This is very different reality from maybe the rest, certainly the rest of the country, but even other parts of Colorado. Robin, you are a native of Texas. So can you talk to that the reality of access to fresh foods, access to this kind of information as well, that this, you know, we might seem like we're preaching to the choir to a lot of our listeners. It might seem obvious, but for a lot of people in the country, this is new information.
But what's universal is the concern that people have for the health of their families. And one out of two men and one out of three women are expected to get cancer in their lifetime. The rates of disease in this country are across all socioeconomic divides. And what's happening is that people are coming to this information because, you know, with a kid that's on ADHD meds, asthma meds, allergy meds, and maybe there's diabetes meds too, all of a sudden parents are stopping and they're saying there's got to be a better way to manage this disease. And so, you know, when you're talking about the fact that the military, for example, has the highest rates of autism, and that they're now turning to these approaches, you know, where it's not a one-size-fits-all, and it's not going to be some magic silver bullet, but if you can begin to manage these conditions and these diseases with diet and nutrition, that's a universal action. And again, it really speaks to the fact that we are a national family sitting down at this national dinner table, and that together we can manage these conditions. Anne and I both actually were just recently in Austin, and the concern down there is tremendous. I mean, there are young mothers there whose 35-year-old husband, you know, has just been diagnosed with all kinds of heart conditions. We've got cancer in children, you know, at 18 months of age. And these are things that we didn't see 30 years ago. And because of that, they're stopping and they're asking a lot of really hard questions, because as we talked about before, it's not just going to change the way you eat.
Well, Anne Cooper, getting back to some of the barriers that you mentioned about, once you have the healthy foods in the schools, that's not always, you know, the end of the road there. You're trying to get kids to actually eat it. And so how have you been able to increase participation in school lunches, given that that's really key? Because the more kids you have eating at school, the easier it is for the program, and ultimately the cheaper, the more cost effective the program will be.
Absolutely. Raising participation is really, really important. And so we work with all different age groups. We had a program we started this year, which was Eat Your Rainbow. So we have salad bars with fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains and healthy protein in all 48 of our schools. And so we went through all the elementary and K-8 schools and did Eat the Rainbow, where we invited all of the kids in the school, whether they brought lunch or bought lunch, to have a free salad. And we taught them that they had to eat different colors, so eat the rainbow. It had to be at least three colors, and white didn't count. So it was trying to get kids to taste different flavors, to equate eating the rainbow and all the different colors with flavors and healthy foods. So that was really great. in elementary schools. In high schools, we did Iron Chef competitions. In middle schools, we did tastings. We had our own chefs and guest chefs come in. Bradford Heap from Salt was there. And so we've had a lot of help from the community as well, trying to show kids that we really are cooking great food and it really does taste good.
And so are you seeing kids in the Boulder Valley School Districts actually participating in the salad bar? Are they getting salads? And then are they eating it? Because it's easy for a kid to say, oh, sure, I'll take a salad. But then, you know, who's monitoring the trash can? Is all that salad getting eaten?
Well, on the Eat the Rainbow days, they don't get their sticker unless they eat their salad. So we really actually tell them, you know, eat what you take what you eat. And we really work with the kids on that. And we actually do monitor the trash cans and we actually do plate waste studies.
And so how is it going?
It's going really well. I mean, the kids, you know, not all kids eat everything and sometimes they take more than they're going to eat. But I think by and large, the salad bars are a really, really great thing for the kids. They get choice. All the choices are healthy and it's delicious.
Well, this issue of choice, because ultimately the parents are the ones who are providing for the child, of course, depending on the age of the child, but particularly for young children, really they should eat what they're being given. And yet that's not the case. We're seeing picky eaters. We're seeing kids turning their nose up at things. Is it because they're being bombarded with commercials? Is it because parents are giving them too much choice? Is it as simple as saying, no, you need to eat this? I mean, obviously, as I said, when a child is older, maybe in high school, that's another issue. But Robin, as a mom, I mean, how do families get beyond that? Because we hear this all the time. They just won't eat it. So they have to eat something. So I give them what they want.
You know, I think the parents are the last line of defense. But really, you've got to step back and say, you know, let's look at the food system as a whole and how it's been structured. And I was recently on a call with a VP of one of the largest food companies. And he said, you know, nobody today would choose the food system that we have. We can't even agree on the number of agencies that we have monitoring all of this. And so, you know, when you step back from that and you realize that, yes, our children are marketed to in a very aggressive way, and children in other countries aren't. And so you don't have that same, you know, nagging factor that we've got here in the U.S., you know, that's constantly presenting. It is, you know, if you look at the fact that our children are treated as, you know, this consumer model and they're on this conveyor belt of consumption, I mean, that's a pretty lucrative business for the food industry. And so the problem is so complex and so dynamic. And again, it's not going to be a one size fits all, especially given the rates of diabetes and allergies that we're seeing in young children. But to really empower parents and caregivers at every level to try to give these children access to food wherever they may be, to meet them where they are. Anne's program in the school lunches is so incredibly important given the number of children in the U.S. that are fed through that national school lunch program. The budget is woefully underfunded given how many children we see go through that program. And the fact that, you know, a lot of children aren't even exposed to fruits and vegetables. They're in food deserts. They don't have access. They, you know, financially, they don't have access to, for them to then have the opportunity to get this healthy food at school lunch is absolutely vital.
And this issue of financing, when for so many people, buying the processed food is actually cheaper than buying fresh vegetables. Of course, these issues, as we're hearing, they're so wide. It goes so much further than food. It goes into our healthcare industry, it goes into our immigration system. When we talk about how the cost of food and who's picking the food and who's presenting it. So what do you do with that when people say, you know, it's a luxury to be able to shop at a farmer's market, to be able to choose the organic option over something that's not organic, to be able to choose fresh food over processed food when it's so much cheaper to buy a Happy Meal than maybe to buy organic tomatoes and make a salad for your family?
Well, I think that's probably why, and I mean, I know it's why I'm doing it, and Anne and almost anybody that's involved in this space, is that once you get into this, you realize that this is not lifestyle, the rich and famous, or some hippie thing. That really, I think clean and safe food is a human rights issue. It should be affordable to absolutely every American. It's our freedom of choice and it's our freedom of health. And because we don't have that yet, because sadly in the structure that we have put in place on the food system, where the federal government has chosen to use taxpayer dollars to subsidize the growth of all of these crops that are used for this processed food, and then only 1% of our taxpayer dollars in those subsidies are used to actually grow fruits and vegetables. Once you learn that, you realize that there is
a greater need for involvement at that level, and that this really does speak to the health of absolutely every single American. And there truly is not anybody that I have met yet in the food movement who doesn't recognize that this is truly a human rights issue.
That's Robin O'Brien. She is a public speaker on the issue of nutrition. She's a mom. She's a food activist. She's the author of The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. Also joining me in the KGNU studio is Chef Anne Cooper, known as the Renegade Lunch Lady. She's currently working in Boulder Valley Schools to transform school lunches. This is Community Radio KGNU Boulder, Denver, as we continue our look at nutrition issues, particularly the issue of childhood nutrition. We welcome your calls in the last 20 minutes of the show. 303-442-4242, 303-442-4242. Well, Chef Anne Cooper, Boulder Valley School District, you've got a whole variety of different schools and communities in that school district. You've got very affluent families, but you also have people on the completely opposite end of that scale. Are you seeing differences in food participation or attitudes toward food according to, you know, if there's a cultural difference or an economic difference in the background of the child?
Yeah, we have a really broad demographic. I mean, you know, in Boulder proper and in the surrounding area, we have some very, very affluent people. But, you know, over 20% of our students in the school district receive free or reduced lunch. That means their families are living at 180% or less of the poverty level. So we do have, I have schools that 50, 60, 70% and more of the kids are actually in that very low demographic. And these are kids that really do need better food. And, you know, when you were talking about the food system, it's really, we really have to look to the next farm bill. The next farm bill is coming in 2012. And I think most people in America really don't understand that the farm bill, and this is to play off of what Robin said, really affects the food we eat, because in the farm bill is the commodity food system. And it is these subsidies, billions, $45 billion that we're spending on corn, cotton, soy, wheat, and rice. Almost none of it going into our food supply, or and if it is going into the food supply, it's genetically modified and going into animal feed, or it makes high fructose corn syrup, or it makes trans fat. It makes 64-ounce Big Gulps for 29 cents. I mean, it's a really, really bad system. And, you know, the USDA and Michelle Obama just came out with a new plate, but the plate has nothing to do with how we subsidize food, which is why potato chips by the pound are way cheaper per calorie than potatoes. So it's really hard to get people, especially from these lower incomes, to be able to eat better when we have access issues and we have financial issues where we're really pushing these cheap foods into the system, and they're very, very unhealthy.
Yes, the farm bill is something we've covered a lot on KGNU, and around the issue of consolidation in the food industry too, where local farmers, food activists say, need to be subsidized, not these huge conglomerates which, you know, monopolize a third of the beef packing industry. And then there's a concern about what's getting into that food system there. But I'd like to turn to the phones. We do have some people standing by. 303-442-4242. Jim, you've been holding. What is your question or comment this morning?
Actually, it's Tim with a T.
Oh, sorry, Tim. Go
anyway,
ahead.
Yeah, I have three comments. One, some years back, I decided to do home gardening, so I grow most of my own vegetables in the summer, and now with the delightful onset of climate change, I can do it well into the fall. And this is related to, one, getting kids to eat vegetables, because I noticed years ago that my child would eat vegetables out of the garden that he would not eat when I bought at the store. I think there's some kind of chemical change that happens, you know, like with a beet, when you leave it in the store for a couple of days. So I noticed that. Secondly, that relates to the cost of things, because although there's some upfront cost for starting your own, you know, turning your yard into a garden, once you've gone through that upfront cost, the vegetables are just way cheaper than at the store. You know, you can buy a packet of seeds for $2 that will give you a seemingly endless supply of, let's say, kale. So that's number one. Number two, a person you should put on your reading list is a fellow named Elliot Coleman. He lives in Maine. You can find him on any list of gardening books, who makes his living by growing vegetables in Maine in unheated greenhouses. And to read his books, it's quite remarkable. And I've done minor experiments with his techniques here in Colorado, and I can verify that there's really something to what this guy does. And third, I'm contemplating making a proposal to the city council of turning some parts of streets into community gardens. I was sitting on my front stoop the other day and gazing out and noticing that the place that gets the most sun around my house is the street. And you could turn half of many streets, sections of the street, you could turn it into a community garden so that people would not have to even go to the store to get their food. Of course, the city would have to put up some money initially to get this started. And I haven't done a survey of the streets of Boulder to figure out exactly where this is applicable and where it's not. You need to leave a place for the garbage truck to get through, I suppose.
Well, Tim, they're all great points. And I think something similar is happening in Denver, where public parks are being used now to grow food. I know in parts of City Park now that they're growing vegetables in there, that they're donating those then to food banks and various different things like that. So I think, Tim, you're onto something there. Keep us posted if you actually get any further with that idea. But Tim raises several points. But you know, there is a definite movement towards people growing their own food. I mean, this is obviously all connected. And this issue where children, when they see what's growing and how a beet comes out of the ground as opposed to something processed in a jar, and they don't even recognize it as the same vegetable, that when a child is presented with that connection, that it seems to do something with their attitude toward food. Chef Ann Cooper, is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate in Boulder Valley School District to have a partnership with the Grow Foundation, and we have gardens currently in 14 of our schools, and we're adding a couple schools per year. And if we really do want to change children's relationship to food, they really have to participate in that. And gardens are such a wonderful way to get kids to understand that, you know, carrots grow in dirt, you know, that dirt is not a bad thing. It's not our enemy. The soil's really important. In Berkeley, we had gardens in every school. So I think there's a growing movement across the country now to put gardens in every school, and I hope that happens.
Well, we have full lines this morning. 303-442-4242 is the number. Mick in Denver, you're our next caller. Welcome to KGNU.
Hello. Most children, from my experience, haven't had the personal experience of pulling a radish out of the ground. I think that would be a good place to start. The other thought is from Michael Pollan is that the real cost of food is not reflected in its price at the market, but is reflected in its external cost. It's the detriment to health, the waterways in terms of pollution, the fuel that's used to transport it. When you put those costs into the price of a hamburger, it becomes quite expensive to eat that hamburger. It might cost $100 by the time you pay for your diabetes medicine down the line. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mick. And of course, labor costs as well are never reflected in food. Robin, that was something you spoke about earlier, the hidden cost that we're not seeing in terms of the impact then on the healthcare system.
Absolutely. And I mean, the U.S. spends more on healthcare and managing disease than any other country in the world. We've got the highest rates of all kinds of conditions. Diabetes is referred to as an American epidemic because of this combination we're seeing between obesity and diabetes. And not only is it weighing on our personal finances, but it's weighing on the finances of our corporations and of our economy.
Well, we've lots of callers standing by waiting to get in on this conversation. Robin O'Brien, author of The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It, is my guest, along with Chef Ann Cooper, currently working in Boulder Valley School District to transform school lunches. Next, I'd like to go to Dan in Boulder. Welcome to KGNU. What's your question or comment?
My comment is I just moved here 3 years ago from Dallas-Fort Worth area, and Boulder itself is, it's very hard for families. I'm a very limited income, but we go to the farmers markets as much as possible, and we buy the fresh fruits, and I've been to biodynamic gardens like Crescent Farms, things like that. And it's paying a little more for a vegetable that is better for you, and maybe eating a little less, you know, into the diet that it should, you know, the regular portions that a diet should be. But I think it's very hard if that parent has been generation through generation of, you know, buying from Tom Thumb, or not Tom Thumb, but, you know, whatever the major grocery store is. You know, I don't know how to get the mind that 10%, to pay 10% more, even if it's, you know, to work that into your budget, it's very hard to do, but it needs to be done, because, like you said, I don't think the education is out there enough for the adult that, you know, going and buying a true value loaf of bread is, there's nothing in that loaf of bread.
Well, Dan, that's a good point. It seems to reemphasize what we're talking about. The real cost of food is not reflected in the cost. But as well as that, we're addicted to cheap food. We think that food should be cheap. And maybe we need to have a paradigm shift where it's like, no, actually, you are supposed to spend more of your total income on good food, but maybe less of it. Robin, is that something? Go ahead, Dan.
We bought a little thing of like organic dried apples. But they came all the way from Fiji or something like that, instead of, you know, down the street. And it was really ridiculous. And they were cheaper than what you could buy that was packaged up from someone that was doing it individually. So, something's got to change out there.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for your call, 303-442-4242. The interconnectedness of this, I mean, it's a bit mind-boggling when you think, all I want to do is feed my kids something healthy, and then you get into globalization and labor issues and water and conservation. But so, I mean, a lot of people, I think, bring up this issue of, well, is it better to buy something that's locally grown but maybe not organic, or something organic, but you know what, it's coming from Fiji, so you've got a lot of other hidden costs in that too. Any thoughts on that, Anne or Robin?
I always say local first. I think that if we're not, you know, if we're going to have a good, healthy food system, we have to support our local and regional farmers. And if, you know, by and large, if you know your farmer and there's a face to that farmer and you can support your local community, you know, we'll go a long way into having the best possible food. And as you work with your local community, you can help people move to less chemically dependent forms of agriculture.
Well, we just have about 10 minutes left in this show looking at the issue of nutrition. Full lines this morning. We'll try and get to all of our callers. Mary in Golden, you've been standing by. Welcome to KGNU. What's your question or comment?
Well, I'm just curious. I'm a teacher, and the school that I teach in is about 50% free and reduced lunch. And as I look at kids coming in, and we don't have a program like the one you're talking about in our school, and I'm just curious if it's possible for the costs to be somewhat manageable if you had a healthy offering that was just pretty similar every day. So you could get a hard-boiled egg and a bowl of whole grain cereal for breakfast instead of those fake waffles with high fructose corn syrup poured over the top of them. It just seems to me, when I was in the Peace Corps and there were food programs for people, they would, you know, in a drought relief program that I worked in Botswana, people would work and they would get whole bags of whole grains to bring home to cook to feed to their families. And then when I came back to this country and you stand in line and people are using food stamps to buy huge frozen pizzas that are horrible for people's health, it just seems like we could have some, you know, I don't know, just basic beans and things like that for lunches that don't have to cost a huge amount of money and would be so much healthier for kids. And then we have all of these issues with an achievement gap, and we know that we're not growing healthy brains by the kind of food that kids are having put in front of them.
Well, Mary, thanks for that question. Chef Ann Cooper, is it as simple as that? Or I know you mentioned there's so many other issues towards getting healthy food in schools.
You know, it goes back to what Robin says about having a really broken food system. I mean, the USDA sets the guidelines in what we have to serve kids. And, you know, they give us $2.72 as a reimbursement rate. And for instance, for lunch, I have to serve fruit, vegetable, grain, and it should be 51% protein, and then milk, as if every child in America needs milk. And I'm supposed to do that all for $2.72, including paying for all of my staff and their health care costs and the trucks to drive the food around. I mean, everything. It just doesn't make sense. Most schools are spending less than a dollar on the food, and yet we have to have this plethora of items. And so it's very difficult. There's billions and billions and billions of dollars in this. So there's a lot of lobbying. There's a lot of money in this. And so it's a very politicalized system, and it is not that easy to change.
But let's not be discouraged and still work towards change.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call. We have lots of people standing by. We'll try and squeeze in our last few callers in this last few minutes of the show. Kelsey in Denver, thanks for being so patient. What is your question or comment this morning?
Yeah, I have about 20, but I'll save one. As a type 1 diabetic, I went to the University of Denver. They had a center there for type 1 diabetes, juvenile onset. And I recall the dietitians who worked on the medical teams telling me that if I ate a whole bunch of pasta and bagels and, make sure that I got my carbos, and they were giving me tips on how to prepare healthy meals, and she was just so excited about pasta. And I later learned by the time I was 22, I had high cholesterol. And I was following what I was told by these people who I trusted as nutritionists in an office who I thought had my best interest, and they probably thought too. But I learned that the reason why I was getting cholesterol wasn't because of my quote-unquote, I wasn't eating high fat, because that's what I was told. If you have high cholesterol, you get it from your high-fat diet. I found out I had high cholesterol from inflammation caused by simple carbohydrates. So I did research, and I asked my dietitian at this clinic, what about coconut oil? Oh, no, saturated, don't eat it. So I continued to follow my own intuition and to not listen to what I was told from a White House FDA meal plan or my doctor at a university hospital, and I lowered my cholesterol with fish oil and coconut oil. How do we know when someone's telling us that yogurt full of gelatin, cornstarch, food colorings, when all these people are being told yogurt, Yoplait, is good for them? How do people learn that what they're told sometimes is maybe doing them a fad diet damage?
Well, Kelsey, thanks for sharing that story. Robin O'Brien, this goes back to a lot of what we spoke about earlier. We're told things, this is good for your child, this is labelled as being good for you as a nutrition thing, and yet then you find out it's not. This can be shattering for people. But what do people do, given that we're not nutritionists, we're not experts? What can people do, people like Kelsey?
Well, you know what's fascinating is in this country, we have a for-profit medical system. So basically sickness sells. And so when you have a for-profit system, you're trying to drive revenue through that system. Most developed countries have a not-for-profit system, which means that they've got to try to control those costs. And so they try to keep their populations healthy. They have an incentive to promote wellness. Here in the U.S., one of the most stunning things that I learned is that diet and nutrition is really not required coursework in medical school. Our doctors are taught to practice medicine, which is to promote and prescribe, not necessarily to prevent. But we are seeing a shift. And one of the things that I encourage people to always do is to seek a second opinion. And in no way is it intended to be age discriminatory. But what we are seeing is that more women are getting into healthcare. And as the doctors are younger, they really are integrating diet and nutrition into their practice methods. And so if you, like this listener, if you have an issue where your gut is telling you something else, seek second opinions, seek third opinions, because there are doctors out there that are really working with the whole patient and not simply treating the symptoms.
Well, Kelsey, thanks so much for sharing that story. In the last couple of minutes, I'm going to try and squeeze in our final two callers. Martin in Boulder, welcome to KGNU. What's your question or comment?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, I was at the wonderful dinner at Arugula, which is an excellent restaurant, and the food was healthful and well prepared and tasteful. And the KGNU food guru was there, And this has been a difficult call to make. He's a wonderful gentleman. He's got a great personality. He's been loyal to KGNU for years, and he looks like a coronary under construction. It was sad to see how morbidly obese this gentleman is, and I feel like the food guru at KGNU should reflect the kind of talk that we've been hearing right now on the radio, that encouraging people to go to pie festivals and eating calorie-drenched non-food, I don't know, just it seems hypocritical on the part of the radio station. And like I say, it's been a difficult call for me to make because he's a wonderful gentleman, and I feel sad for him because he does not look like he's going to be around for a very long time.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for that call, and we'd certainly appreciate your thoughtful comments about programming here on KGNU. We just have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to go to Julia. Do you have a very brief question or comment this morning?
Yes, I do. I am a preschool teacher at a Montessori school down here in Boulder, and last two summers I was a farm manager at an organic garden, and, you know, we get to see these kids, we get to school, and they pick their own salads, and they pick their own radishes, and their three-year-old's excited to eat radishes, which I had never seen in my educational career. Coming from working at a school in Oregon where you ask children, what's your favorite food, and they say, it's a Big Mac, or I like the tacos at Taco Bell. And it's not only, I think, about getting kids in the garden and getting them to try these foods, but actually teaching them the value of nutrition or taking care of our bodies and taking care of each other and the planet with our practices, how we eat.
Julia, thank you. That's a great comment to end on. Thank you so much for calling in today. You know, there's a lot of projects and ideas actually happening in local school districts. We heard about the INEP, Integrated Nutrition Education Program. KGNU partners with them on Eat Your Radio. Jeff Ann Cooper in Boulder Valley School District. I mean, there are things happening, but it seems like we need to all start connecting and maybe give up on the fact that it mightn't happen federally, but if we all act locally, it might work. Robin, your thoughts on that?
I do. I think it's one of the most patriotic things that we can be doing is to really restore the health of our families and the health of our children, because our future is 100% dependent on them.
Well, Chef Ann Cooper, just your final thoughts, given that we've had a couple of people calling in to say we'd love to have this kind of program in our school district. If people would like to see a change in the school, in their school district, what can they do?
My foundation has built two websites where we're really trying to help people make these changes. The first one is thelunchbox.org, which has tools for schools to change from processed foods to healthy foods. And we're also involved in something called Let's Move Salad Bars to Schools, where we're partnering with the First Lady's Let's Move initiative and trying to put salad bars in every school in America. So far, we've put out 700 salad bars this year, and that's salad bars2schools.org. So get a salad bar for your school and visit thelunchbox.org.
Lunchbox.org. Robin O'Brien, you have a website as well?
Absolutely. We have information where parents can learn how to do one thing. For those that can't afford to go organic, who do want to start to make these changes, come to allergykids.com, and we have a Do One Thing page, which will help you get started.
That's excellent. And of course, don't forget eatyourradio.kgnu.org. Hear all of our excellent fifth grade nutrition reporters. You can read recipes as well, and it's also in Spanish as well as in English. Lots of ideas there. eatyourradio.kgnu.org. We'll link to all the websites that we've mentioned this morning if you go to our website, kgnu.org. I'd like to thank both of my guests, Robin O'Brien, thank you so much for coming in, and Chef Ann Cooper, thank you so much for coming in.